The next area we want to look at is the advisory body role. And our first question before coming to the main question is whether you know why those three, ICROM, ICOMOS, and IUCN, were chosen and no others. Why those three were written into the convention. Because my understanding is there were a lot of other international organizations around at the beginning of the creation of the convention.
I think what surprised me is while those three bodies are named in the convention, that more have not been sought out to work collaboratively with the three named advisory bodies. I think issues of the modern day and the environment, cultural and natural, that IUCN itself can't come up with all answers, and it can't address all issues. The same I assume would be on the cultural side. The technology is there to broaden the scope, and I think that would have been a healthy move. I mean, there were closed meetings.
Of the committee?
Of the committee. The public wasn't invited. NGOs were not invited. Some of them were turned down flat when they tried. One of the first evidences of expression of a wider public concern with what was going on was over the Tasmanian site, where we had demonstrators in front of my building in Washington, as well as out on the street in front of UNESCO. I felt that greater ventilation and transparency of the committee, opening it to the issues involved of particular specialist groups or issue groups, would have enriched the consideration of the committee. And so I felt that the early decisions with regard to basically closed meetings and denying access to a variety of institutions and bodies has been a way of weakness. And it has, I believe, contributed to the general lack of public understanding or appreciation of what goes on.
The second part about the advisory bodies is in relation to their performance, because each one plays a bit of a different role and each one performs differently. And if you were to take the step back and try and assess them, how would you assess each of them?
Again, I'm somewhat more familiar with the role and various explorations IUCN has made. Maybe necessary for coherence, but I felt economically that budgets were way over expended and asked for because of failure to use site-familiar individuals, regional individuals early on that weren't being used, to put total judgment into one or two people traveling the globe making these evaluations and preliminary recommendations. As putting your eggs in one basket. And I think, again, the enrichment and the appreciation and the understanding properties would have been enhanced earlier on by far greater utilization of people closer to the site and the scale of economy and the scale of capability that could have pointed up earlier issues that may have been overlooked by one or two people coming by on a one-time swing. I don't know how true that is in the case for ICOMOS, but I know that in the past, for ICOMOS, it was quite similar to IUCN, with primary responsibilities lying in the hands of one person. And that one person's perspective, however professional, however judicious, is still one person, and may not have reflected the full depth and significance, and particularly issues facing sites. It would have warded off emergent endangered consideration had they been addressed and pointed out and laid out. And I felt that would have been an excellent way of generating very appropriate assistance requests. I don't think that was done adequately. One hinge point I can think of was, it seems to me that in the first half of the convention, the committee history, they seemed to listen to the advisory bodies more. I'm less familiar with what might have been current or what's going on now, but there was a period of time in which it appeared to me, irrespective of best professional designated wisdom of the advisory body, would be ignored, totally ignored entirely. Why? Was it incidental? Occasional? I'm not so sure. I have the feeling that it was a change in mood on the part of the committee, and that may have been simply changes in rotation of committee members. But it was as if they'd lost credibility. Not 100%, but there'd be issues in which their best recommendations, advice was totally ignored. And the reverse was a decision of the committee. I think that, whether that persists or not, I have no idea. But if it were to continue, that would be regrettable, and it would be the other piece of loss of the advantage of the advisory bodies. One being lack of discipline on their part, and regardless of what discipline, being ignored by the committee. Very, very bad combination, I would think, and could lead to nothing other than the diminution of the merit and value of the convention itself in the longer term.